Good afternoon, Diego.
Good afternoon to you.
All right, so this year's theme is shining a light on suicide prevention for World Suicide Prevention Day. So keeping in theme with that, what fuels the stigma that causes people to remain in the dark about their condition?
It's a complex explanation, probably, and also difficult to understand. But this is an invitation to react to the dark phenomenon of suicide. Dark because surrounded by secular stigma. Dark because relegated to the environment, which is a narrow environment of mental disorder, something that is also highly stigmatized still today in Australia. Dark because it's something that make feel guilty the relative or the person that didn't intervene, didn't impede the suicide. So let them live for the rest of their life in the condition of those who have many whys to answers and many opportunities that they probably consider having missed in interrupting that tragic career, tragic itinerary that brought individuals to die by suicide. So there is a lot of dark around that, and shining a light is not just to remember the person, but also to, in a way, make more light in a very obscure phenomenon.
Definitely opening up the conversation. There seems to be a bit of confusion nowadays on feeling depressed versus having depression. So what's the difference between a depressive episode and a depressive disorder?
We have exaggerated considering depression the cause of all suicide cases. Depression is certainly involved in main suicide. I guess that nobody dies has been happy, but something is to be distressed, be angry, to feel disappointed, disillusioned, having no hopes. But all these things are not necessarily synonym of depression, and we have narrowed our vocabulary too much with an oversimplification that possibly was hiding the possibility that a pill, an antidepressant, may cure all these problems. Reality, we realize more and more that there are many causes behind the suicide cases. And even us, the psychiatrists, we have different views of understanding depression. We try to follow the American colleagues with their DSM system, but in the view of psychiatrists, culture and geographic location and traditions may make important differences in way in which we consider depression, even when we face what could be a disease, not just a reaction to life stressors. So for someone, depression commences when there is a disproportionate reaction to something, or there was not even a trigger. For some other, depression can be a kind of gestalt, so a unique situation which cannot be decomposed in a series of components, but there's a kind of intrinsic quality. So a special type of reaction. And the majority of psychiatrists around the world, and I'm talking about the result of World Psychiatric Association together with the World Health Organization survey, so it's not just my interpretation, but many psychiatrists are more pragmatic and use depression when the severity of sadness increases and persists. So the approaches to interpret depression may be quite different even among psychiatrists. But this is just one element of the discussion. I believe that the most element of the discussion is that we have possibly overemphasized the role of depression, and we have concentrated most of our attention in identifying and treating depression and making of it most of our prevention against suicide. And this is fine for a view, for a perspective, but we shouldn't neglect the biggest picture. And the biggest truest picture is represented by the life of individuals, which are complex, often very difficult to understand, and clearly sometimes too difficult to try to make effort in entering the social environment of individuals. So even us as physicians, we are, I believe, well trained in recognizing symptoms of conditions, of clinical conditions. But when it happens to environmental factors or even psychosocial factors, our preparation is much less. And so we should dedicate a lot of time to people who present suicide ideation. And often we don't have such a time. We would like to have scales and questionnaires that identify a risk of suicide. But actually, these are not working better than a good clinical intervention. View, especially if the patient is the real center of our attention, and so is the protagonist of the story, and not just the passive responders to a list of questions.
Yeah.
So we have to become much more equipped culturally, and also learning from our mistakes. So we made efforts in preventing suicide, but largely these efforts were not successful. And when we see that suicide is declining in rates, which is happening, unfortunately, at the global level. But then we tend to attribute this declining rate to the general improvement of quality of life of individuals and the general improvement in access to health care of individuals. So we have witnessed spectacular declines in rates of country, for example, of Eastern Europe, country which have very high rates traditionally, such as Lithuania, Estonia, for example, and they have nearly half their rate of suicide. On the other hand, we see Australia that is navigating along the same road, if not increasing, rate of suicide in the last decade. Or we are witnessing the very scary increase in a country that is paying a lot of attention to suicide, investing a lot in research, having many NGOs dedicated to suicide, like the United States. But the United States are a country in which the rate of suicide have increased nearly 30% in less than 20 years. So a very dramatic response to the efforts that were done. So there is something wrong in what we are doing. And someone claims that a country like America has an index of social inequality that it's too big, and the rich are becoming richer and the poor poorer. And so the difference at the social level is increasing disproportionately, and this doesn't make the good of a society. And so for a number of different perspectives, as I hope I can provide to you, there are different perspectives and different lenses through which to observe this incredibly terrible phenomenon like suicide.
Yeah, what are the symptoms and warning signs of someone, as you mentioned, with a high suicide ideation risk, and how can we recognize them?
We have to distinguish between risk factors and warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
Risk factors may be, in any case, events or situations that increase the probability that a given event may happen, may occur. So they happen necessarily far away in time, predisposing an individual, and may happen in the immediacy of a suicide act as a triggering factor. Warning signs are normally behavioral signs, means that something is different from the usual in a given individual. But warning signs, first of all, to be interpreted, need to be picked up by people, which means that you don't have to be alone, because otherwise nobody will detect these warning signs, these behavioral changes in an individual. So lonely individuals are particularly exposed, for example, people who live alone and secluded, and that's why we have higher rates of suicide also in rural areas,
yeah,
among the many other factors. But warning signs are often captured when the event has occurred. And so people go back and see, oh, I should have picked up that he was not attending school as usual. He was drinking much more than before, smoking more than before, giving away cherished possessions, changing wills, or not paying attention to personal hygiene as before, not sleeping at night. So a number of different behavioral signs, and they vary between genders and with age groups. Clearly, for a young fellow, it could be a dramatic change in not attending recreational activities anymore, not being with friends anymore, not playing basket or rugby as before anymore.
Of course.
And for an elderly person, it could be the ordering things, putting labels, deciding to make a new order in the home, if not changing, as I say, the wills. So this type of signs, this type of behavioral changes.
Definitely. How do we have healthy conversations with someone that we are worried about?
First of all, listening and having the time and the predisposition to listen, which is not always the case.
Yeah, listening to listen and not respond, right?
Listening, not being judgmental.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to convince someone that your ideas are right and his or her are wrong.
Of course.
So these are different approaches. And possibly, if you succeeded, giving the sensation to your listener that you are really taking care of this person. You're really interested in the story. It's far more important what the person thinks than what you have done. In other words, you may have a person that is suicidal, but has the perception that there is someone really interested, and then being really interested, but this person is not aware of this interest. I don't know if I was clear enough,
mm-hmm.
but it's clearly more important the target of the conversation perceives and realizes out of the conversation that your good intentions. So in this area where you should be open to everything, always in a judgmental way, where you have to solicit different perspectives without imposing any perspective, trying to scope every possible motive for doing that or trying to put in operation your tragic intentions. So you have to listen, and listen may be really a big word if someone has no time or predisposition. For example, there are many colleagues that don't have that predisposition, and they don't have the time, or they have too rigid views, and their capacity to be effective in changing for the better a suicide ideation may thus be very reduced. And I'm saying that we should recruit the right army to fight a problem of suicide among people. And so having people motivated, very willing to do the job, knowing that it is a terribly difficult job, which can be very frustrating. And many people would not want to be embroiled with suicidal people. They don't even receive suicidal clients. That's the reality.
Definitely, of course. Now, thank you so much for joining us today on the show, Diego.
Yeah.
All right, now, an aside for all of our listeners, if you or anyone you know wants to reach out for help, Lifeline is available 24/7 at 13 11 14. That's 13 11 14. You can also reach Beyond Blue at 1300 224 636. Now, mental illness is not a choice, but recovery is.